Welcome to tonight's Saturday Night Special, episode 128.
I'm David Wood. I challenge you to invest in yourself and others and impact the world by using your gifts to live out your calling. Having the ability to speak your truth is key. And one way to learn how to do that is listen to this, the Inspired Stewardship Podcast with my friend, Scott Mader. I'll see you there. I believe that up to 95% of our actions in a day are unconscious. They're unconscious and we're creatures of habit and we gravitate naturally towards our comfort zone, which is fine. It's fine until you realize, wait a minute, I want more in life.
Welcome and thank you for joining us on the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. If you truly desire to become the person who God wants you to be, then you must learn to use your time, your talent, and your treasures for your true calling. In the Inspired Stewardship Podcast, you will learn to invest in yourself, invest in others, and develop your influence so that you can impact the world.
In tonight's Saturday Night Special, I interview David Wood about how his experiences with coaching and gurus led him to where he is today. I also asked David to share how shiny object syndrome is an epidemic and what we can do about it. And David also shares with you why speaking the truth is so important, both to us and to each other. You know, one area that a lot of folks need some help with is around the area of productivity. Getting not just more things done, but actually getting the right things done can be really tough. I've got a course called Productivity for Your Passion that's designed to help you do this and then to hold you accountable and walk with you so that you can tailor productivity not just to be getting more done, but actually getting the right things done. What's more, we take the approach of looking at your personality and how you actually look at things in the world and tailor the productivity system to your personality. Because the truth is, a lot of the systems that are out there are written really well for somebody with a particular personality type. But if you have a different approach to things, they just don't work. But there's tools and techniques and approaches that you can take that will work for anyone. And we help you do that in Productivity for Your Passion. Check it out over at inspiredstewardship.com/launch.
David is a former consulting actuary to Fortune 100 companies. And he built the world's largest coaching business, becoming number one on Google for life coaching and coaching thousands of hours in 12 countries around the globe. As well as helping others, David is no stranger to overcoming challenges himself. Having survived a full collapse of his paraglider with a fractured spine, witnessing the death of his sister at age 7, suffering from anxiety and depression, and even a national gong show. He coaches high-performing business owners to double revenue and their time off by focusing on less and being 30% more courageous in their business or career. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. So you've had a little bit of an interesting background coming from being a consulting actuary and these sorts of things, having some things that went on in your early life, like we talked about in the intro. How did your experience, how did your job background lead you to where you are today doing coaching and working with high performance entrepreneurs?
Big question, and I'll give you a short answer. As a kid, I grew up very left-brained. I just got really good at numbers and systems and money and business. And I think it's because I had a tragedy. My little sister was killed and I was there. I witnessed it. And I found out later in life when someone suggested I go and do a personal growth program that I knew nothing about intimacy and vulnerability and authenticity and true influence and leadership. So it's like the first half of my life was all about getting good at consulting to Fortune 100 companies and helping them make more money. And the second half of my life has been sitting with gurus and navel gazing and doing things that make your hair curl and going into the personal. So now what's a bit unusual about me is I don't just do business coaching. I do business and life coaching for business owners. Mm-hmm. And I'm unwilling to choose one or the other. I know you're supposed to focus on just business or focus on just life coaching. I'm unwilling. I look at the whole person. We start on making more money because that's where most people want to start. But if that's all you want, you should work with someone else, because I want to know, how are you living your life and how could it be better? Mm-hmm. So that on your deathbed, you can say, I have zero regrets. I really gave it everything.
So when you think about that, I think one of the mistakes that a lot of entrepreneurs make is they think of their life in compartments. My business compartment, my home life compartment, my money-making compartment, whatever it is. How do you help people look at that in a more holistic way?
We start with goals. I think that's always a great place to start. And sometimes that's confronting. It's like, oh, I really got to create what I want my life to look like. So we start there, and I just set this homework for a new client yesterday. I said, give me 3 business goals for the end of 2022, and then 3 personal goals. They got nothing to do with business, and we'll see what comes up. Mm-hmm. Some people might need a month or two of really digging in and seeing what would be meaningful. I got one client said, I want more meaningful goals. That's why he came to me. So I think that goal setting process is where we start looking at the whole person and what you want. Now, for the people who are very tunnel vision on business right now, that's fine. But personal stuff is likely to come up along the way. Mm-hmm. Like maybe I spot that there's a confidence issue, or there's one guy wants to work on his personal life, but there's another part of him that says that's too selfish. You've got a family, you've got kids, you should be working on that. So already, before we've gotten to our first official session, some of his blocks are coming up. And that excites me. It's like, I want those to come up. We want to welcome those things that are trying to sabotage you, bring them in, invite them in as an honored guest, and let them have their voice.
Yeah, one of the things I've seen over the years is, if you push away those beliefs, they almost take a deeper root in our mind than if we invite them in.
Yeah, you're right. And it's ironic. You think, like someone said to me just recently, I don't like complainings and negative energy. So I've been trying to be really positive and not feel any of the negative emotions. But then we realize that she's got some sadness. She really has it. That's honest. That's what's there. And by her trying to suppress it, it doesn't get to have its day in the sun. And so it persists and it stays there. And I said, well, just so you know, with me, this is a come as you are party, and you're welcome to be sad. Yeah, you may not want to wallow in it for weeks, but what would it be like if you actually felt all of that? And I totally agree with you. It's ironic. If we suppress it, it tends to stick around. And if we can welcome it in, like I learned to cry many years ago, I had to learn how to do it. And it's wonderful. Let the tears come in and the wave washes over me. And then it could be 30 seconds later or 10 minutes later, it's done. Mm-hmm. It's moved through. And go to something else. I'm glad you brought that up, because that is something I try and do with my clients. See what's under the surface that's being suppressed and bring it out into the light.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that you talk about a lot, the name is Focus CEO of the business. Why do you talk about shiny object syndrome and feel like that's one of the big problems that a lot of entrepreneurs face?
I believe that up to 95% of our actions in a day are unconscious. They're unconscious, and we're creatures of habit, and we gravitate naturally towards our comfort zone, which is fine. It's fine until you realize, wait a minute, I want more in life. I'm just in my patterns. I brush my teeth the same way all the time. I make my same cup of tea every morning in this same cup, and we do things the same way. And where I get excited is, what if we do put our CEO hat on? And if you can't see the video, I've got a hat right now that says focus.co. What if we put our hat on, put our creative hat on, and start to create what we want? That's going to set you apart from 95% of the population, because most of them don't create goals and write them down and work towards those. But say you do set goals and you start working towards them. What starts to come in is this shiny object syndrome, is we're like kids in a candy store, or I like to say the human mind is like a monkey on crack, just shooting off in all sorts of different, and you think I'm wrong, just sit down and close your eyes and count to a 50 breaths and see what happens. So we're chasing monkey treats. Mm-hmm. And that's fine if your goal is entertainment. If you're having a blast, you've got all the money you want, you're achieving everything you want, and you're having a great time in life, keep doing that. But if you want more, where it can get frustrating is in chasing these shiny objects. And we chase them on two different levels. We'll chase them when we look at a year out, say 2022, December 31. If I ask people to set some goals, some people will come up with 20. Okay, that's too many. That's an example of you trying to put too much on your plate. If we bring it back to, say, 7 days, what are you going to do in the next 7 days? We usually will choose too much stuff. Mm-hmm. But then even if we get disciplined with that, what about today? Are you able to stay on track with those 7 day goals? It's hard. You've got Facebook calling to you. You've got text messages calling to you, voicemails calling to you. You've got unlimited email that you haven't responded to. And so even when clients get as rigorous as, I know my 12-month goals, my 3-month goals, my 7-day goals, they go off track in the day because they're responding to all these shiny monkey treats mm-hmm. and responding to emails and text messages and whatever. And, oh, an idea pops in. I didn't order that stuff on Amazon. I got to go and do that. Mm-hmm. I've got a new client that just signed up with me and we got started. And she said, oh my goodness, I just in between the time when we had our last call and our new call, and there was only like 2 hours, she said, I set a target. I said, I'm going to do this. And my mind wanted to take me off in 3 different directions. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I know I'm talking to David in an hour. I'm going to let that go. And I'm going to stick with this. And I got so excited for her mm-hmm. because that's the thin edge of the wedge. That's her starting to become aware of the shiny object syndrome and how scattered she is. And she made a different choice. Mm-hmm. And I said, we're going to keep doing that. What you just did, that's a win. We're going to keep going. It might seem trivial. It's not. It's monumental.
And I think, too, one of the things that I've asked people, if you don't believe that shiny object syndrome at some level is out there, how many courses have you bought in the last 2 years that you've watched no more than one video in? Or how many programs have you signed up for that you never actually did anything with? For most people, it's an insanely large number.
Yeah. And I want to tell a short story that I think will drive this home for all listeners who are in that camp. They're like, yeah, I got the course. I had the intention. Mm-hmm. I didn't complete it. There's a new client just signed up. And in my group program, I have an 8-week course that I throw in for free. And I said, you don't have to do this 8-week course. It's mm-hmm. optional. But I know he really respects this guy, Ezra Firestone, who's an amazing marketing teacher. And I said, when he was getting started in the game, and I know he's making $25 million a year now, but when he was getting started, I gave him some DVDs because he wanted to learn internet marketing. I said, do you think he watched those DVDs? And my clients, yeah, he probably watched them. I said, he watched them 8 times. And now I'm learning from him. So that's the mindset. It's, I am going to commit. I'm going to do it, whether it's a coaching program or it's course content, or it's an amazing book that you've had referred to you. Most people in the population do not take that on like their life's depending on it. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to, but if you want to be ahead of the other 95%, this is one of the skill sets that will set you apart.
So what's the real cost on people then of that, the monkey brain on crack, as you put it earlier, you know, what happens to our life because of it?
Yeah. I'll talk about the payoff first, because there's a reason we do it. The payoff is entertainment. The payoff is we get a dopamine hit every time you check an email message or a text message. And every time you get to cross a little thing off your list that may not be important, may not make you more money, may not add to your happiness, but you get to cross that damn thing off. That's the payoff. The cost is frustration. The cost is knowing that you could be moving faster towards your goals. You could be making more money. You could have more time off. You could have more time with your kids. You could be doing things that are fulfilling and meaningful in your life, and it's not happening because you're just chasing monkey treats. That's the cost. And I don't want anyone, when that time comes and you're laying on your deathbed looking back, I don't want anyone that I've been in touch with to say, I wish I'd gone for it more. I wish I'd asked for more of what I wanted. I wish I'd said no to the things that weren't working. I wish I had fully lived my life and I have regret. I don't want that to happen. And that's why I keep on showing up on podcasts like this, and I keep on putting out my content and keep nudging people in the direction of what really matters for you. And are you willing to stop chasing the monkey treats and exercise some discipline to move towards what you want at a faster pace?
One of the other things that I've seen in checking you out and looking at some of what you put out into the world is you talk a lot about speaking your truth. What do you mean by that? And why is that something that's important and maybe doesn't come easy to most of us?
Well, that's my favorite question so far. I'm just lit up hearing that. See, as a kid, I wasn't asked, David, how are you feeling about that? And hey, do you have some anger about that? Or are you feeling sad that we're not going to go to Disneyland now? And we said we were going to. That wasn't a thing. So I grew up basically hiding a lot of what was going on from other people without knowing that's what I was doing, and hiding a lot of what was going on for myself. Mm-hmm. You and I might have a conversation. Maybe you say something and I feel there's a contraction inside. I just ignore it, skip over it, and jump to whatever's next. And Joe Dispenza puts it very simply. He says there's a gap between who we truly are and what we present to the world. And that gap is costly. That gap isolates us. I'm going to feel more lonely. I'm going to feel less confidence because maybe you're going to discover the gap. Mm-hmm. And so I'm passionate about closing the gap and what that, and I'm writing a book about it right now called Addressing the Mouse in the Room, because the elephant's not alone. We all know about the elephant. You see it, I see it, no one's saying anything. But what about the more subtle things that are going on? My desires that I haven't named with my partner, with my coworkers. Maybe someone's late constantly. Oh, I just went to an acting class this week and it's 6:45 p.m. start time. I'm there at 6:40. The teacher's there at 6:45. Three people were 10 to 15 minutes late and she waited for them to arrive. So I'm starting to feel annoyed. I showed up on time, and not only are we not starting on time, but we're waiting for other people and then there's no one saying anything. So now I'm in mystery. Wait, is there a container? Should I just arrive at 7 o'clock? And that's an example of a mouse. And I decided to name it. And I named it pretty artfully and gently. And I sent her a message and I said, I want to know what the story is. I am willing to start late and I'll just do my singing exercises outside until you're ready to start. I'm willing if that's the way it's going to go. But if we're going to have a container, that's my preference. And I'd like to know that too. Mm-hmm. So now I'm expressed with my teacher and she can name her mice. And she said, you know what? I did mean to address it and I forgot. I'm going to send out an email about it. Great. There's a micro example, right? It's not a big mouse. It's a little mouse, but it's the kind of thing that can drive a wedge in
between. But it can grow into a big mouse because people will quit. You could quit the class over that frustration if you were that, if that was something that grew and continued to be that thorn in your side, and then you're giving up something that's important to you because of, you know.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And I was like, my annoyance did flow through into the class.
Sure.
I didn't say anything about it, but I was a bit frustrated with some other things that came up and it was just built. So mm-hmm. Yeah, the mice breed And as you say, they can grow into rodents of unusual size. So
thank you for the Princess Bride reference. I appreciate it.
Yes, I always love doing that. So let's be more authentic. And look, there are business reasons for this too. It's not just that you'll feel better and that you'll have more intimacy and more love and more connection. People will trust you more. If you are sharing your truth, you'll lose some people for sure. But those are the people you're supposed to lose. Other people, I have some amazing people in my life. Jack Canfield from Chicken Soup for the Soul was kind enough to write the foreword to my first book. And I firmly believe if I was just being an average, ordinary human and trying to blow smoke up his butt, then we would not have developed a relationship. I wouldn't have stayed at his house and met his wife. I think it's because I took risks. When we sat next to each other at a luncheon, which was a big deal for me, I said, look, I wonder if you'd be open to writing the foreword to my book. And I know that's a big ask. And I'm going to take a risk here. I've asked Richard Branson to write the foreword. And if he says yes, I'm going to go with that. I'm wondering if you'd be willing to be a backup for this. And I know that's a huge ask. And classic Jack, he said, you're going alphabetically. I understand that. And I was like, oh my God. But he wasn't offended. And Branson ended up saying no. And Jack ended up saying yes. I took a big risk. But do you really want to be an average human on this planet and playing it safe all the time? The book will show you how to artfully name your mice so that there's more connection and people trust you more. And I believe that you'll end up with more influence, more money, more clients, as well as feeling better about who you are on the planet. So I'm a huge fan for artfully identifying your mice and then naming mice instead of keeping this gap between who you are and what the world gets to see.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you said in there is we have that gap between who we really are and what the world gets to see, like you just talked about. Where do you think that gap comes from? Why do we let the mice stay in our life and breed and grow?
As I was writing the book, I started writing a story about one of the initial cavemen called Grog. And Grog was on a hunt and he was afraid when challenged by a tiger, and everyone got to see that. And so when it came up time to contest the leadership, he was passed over because people were like, oh, he's afraid. We don't want that guy as a leader. So Grog learned not to show fear in the hunt, and all the little boys started to catch on in the village. And they're like, we won't show fear either because maybe we won't get to be leader. So that's my theory of how it all started. And then it just keeps on growing. We just learned, I won't show this to people and I won't show that to people because they might get angry with me. They might pass me over. When I started telling people about anxiety and depression and told a couple of close friends what I was really going through, one friend had wanted to refer me to a potential coaching company, but he said, I want to be honest with you. I got some concerns. Are you really going to be able to show up for your clients, given you've got so much going on and you've got all these health challenges? And we got to talk through it. And I was able to point out that no matter what I was going through personally, it didn't stop me showing up for my clients. And so he was like, okay, but there's an example of how it can be scary to show. And I've been trying to do this for years on Facebook and show the bad stuff as well as the good stuff. But it's challenging. It's so tempting to say, no, I just show the shiny stuff so people think I'm amazing and want to work with me. Maybe if you show them all of you, they might be able to relate to you. I've had some people reach out and say, the fact that you have had such a struggle with PTSD and anxiety and depression makes me feel like I can relate to you. And if you can overcome that for yourself and still show up in the world the way you are, maybe there's hope for me as well. So I want to encourage people to reframe these things. Yes, it's scary initially, and you may lose some opportunities, and you may lose some people, and you may have some people be angry with you. I just got a chance to sit in a Colorado prison on Sunday, and I sat with women inmates, training them in being more authentic. and more open and more honest. And the head of Colorado prisons drove an hour on his Sunday to sit in on the class. It was very exciting and very scary. And one thing he pointed out is he said, as you are more honest and as you are trying to be more relational with the guards, you are going to cause trouble. You will cause trouble and there will be conflict, but this is the good kind of trouble. This is the good kind of conflict. And I need your help to do that because we're making a change. And I thought, what a great way to frame it. Yes, there will be conflict and yes, there will be trouble as you share more of your mice and name your mice. But this is the good kind of trouble that we want to create. Martin Luther King created a lot of trouble, but it was the good kind of trouble.
Mm-hmm. And change doesn't come without some level of conflict, whatever that might mean. And there could be good change too. And I think we forget that because for most of us, the word change automatically has a negative connotation, even though technically the word change is not positive or negative. It's neutral. It just means different. It doesn't mean good or bad.
Yeah. And look, it's, I think it's an evolutionary trait for many of us. For many of us to gravitate towards a comfort zone. If we kept on jumping off cliffs, too many of us are going to die out. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, I'll stick with what's new and comfortable. Oh, sorry, I'll stick with what's comfortable and old. But that was more important when there were tigers chasing us. These days, we're probably not going to die from trying new things. It's just going to feel scary and uncomfortable. So there's a thing called practicing deliberate discomfort, which is similar to I'm going to go for the good trouble. It might feel awkward. You go into a cold shower. It doesn't feel good, but it's got all these health benefits for the body. Same with naming some of these mice. It may not feel good. And this is where the courage comes in. It's really going to take some courage for you to say to someone, hey, something you did last week didn't sit well with me. And I want to bring it up because I'd like us to be more connected. Do you have a few minutes to talk about it? That's a leadership move. Mm-hmm. That takes courage. And I want to nudge us all in that direction.
So earlier, too, you talked about starting with the idea of setting goals and picking goals and that sort of thing. And I wanted to circle back to that idea and dig a little deeper because you mentioned people, sometimes they'll set way too many goals. Sometimes they'll set only business goals and won't think about the personal, or there's a lot of, quote, wrong ways, and I'm putting that in air quotes, to set goals. Why is setting the right goals and plans so important? And then how do people actually know if they're doing that?
I think it's important because would you really want to spend weeks, months, and years climbing this mountain only to discover that it's the wrong mountain for you? That's not a good use of time. Maybe you set a financial goal. And that's important because, and here's a great question to ask ourselves. If I achieve this financial goal, what is that going to give me? What will that make possible? Now, one thing might be peace of mind. That's one reason I want money. In fact, it might be the only reason I want more money is just for more peace of mind because I have enough money now to buy anything I want. But that peace of mind, knowing that if a rainy day or things go wrong, that might be one thing. Another reason might be you want more freedom. I want to be able to work, say, 20 hours a week. That might be a good target for a lot of humans. So when you realize that, you can add that to your goals. Actually, I do want more time off. And then maybe instead of waiting until the money comes in, maybe there are ways for you to have that now. Maybe you want the freedom to travel. Maybe you want to be able to spend more time with your kids. Okay, let's not wait 5 years or 1 year until you hit your financial goal. Let's add that now. So I think it's important because we don't want to climb the wrong mountain and waste 5 years of our life. But also some of the goals could be a bit dry and superficial, and I call them primary goals. But then what's underneath that? And I think that's a useful process to work out. Because as people start to set goals and I start drilling in with them, their values become apparent. Mm-hmm. Oh, I value freedom. So this is what I want. I value connection and I value peace. And if I had more money, I think I would have all three of these things. Okay, great. So the goals process can be a wonderful discovery process. And then ideally by doing that and having the investment up front, you will not waste tens of thousands of dollars and years of your life on goals that were foreseeable to be unfulfilling.
And a lot of people, I think, pick the goals that somebody else has picked.
Yeah, that's true. It's others, yeah, and society could choose it. And also, look, sometimes you need to achieve those goals to discover that's really not going to float you. When I came out of high school, we were looking at what am I going to do, and I was good at math, and we figured, oh, well, maybe accountancy. And then we discovered actuarial studies was much harder and more prestigious, and you got more money, and so I guess I should do that. And I got paid to go to university to do that. So it seemed like that's what you do. Oh my God. The blood, sweat, and tears and the trauma. Like I came top of my school, and yet this brutalized me, this course. So you would study for a whole year and sit a 6-hour exam. And if you failed that exam, and sometimes 80% of people failed the exam, you had to sit another year to do that exam. And there were up to 10 exams.
I was going to say there were multiple exams too, right? Yep.
Yeah, it was horrible. And I thought, oh, if I get like halfway through and I don't like it, then I'll just stop and I'll do something else. No, once you're almost qualified, you can't stop. It's like being almost a doctor. You've done all this training and you're almost board certified. Are you going to quit? No. Some people have to go another 5 years chasing that final exam to qualify. I didn't know all that stuff. And then once I qualified, a year later, I quit. Mm. A year after this, that was me climbing the wrong mountain for sure. And had I had some coaching or any other kind of input at the beginning or better career guidance, I could have realized this isn't really something I want to do. Then again, maybe I needed to do it to discover, okay, I can run with the bulls and I can go and consult to Sony Music and Ford and Exxon and be on Park Avenue and get this great income. And then I realized this is not what my life is about. My life is about helping people really love their life. It's not about what I thought it was about, which is becoming partner in a big consulting firm. And I sometimes look back and go, oh, I wonder what it'd be like to be making those bucks, or if I'd become an investment banker. If I really wanted money, that's what I'd be doing. I'd be an investment banker, but that's not my primary goal. Now I know that about myself. Mm-hmm. So it can be good to work out that stuff early on. Just imagine what was the cost of me spending. I think it took me 8 years. It took me 8 years to qualify. What's the cost of that? And what if I could have worked out that's not where I want to go and I could have gotten into coaching and personal growth earlier? Oh, wow. I could have been so much more successful at what really mattered to me. Anyway, I don't normally geek out on this, but I'm realizing now I could have used coaching back.
And I think a lot of times that having the coach, having an external accountability, having somebody that can help you ask the right questions can help you avoid some of that. Climbing the wrong ladder, climbing the wrong mountain. I've seen that from multiple people over the years. Yeah. So before I got a few questions that I like to ask all of my guests, but before I go there, is there anything else that you'd like to share with the listener just about either about the mouse in the room or anything else that we've talked to today that you think is important for them to?
There's one new thing that's been popping into my head about commitment. And I've been fascinated by commitment for years, like this human ability we have to choose something with our willpower and then create it. We don't use it as much as we could. And this is where coaching comes in. But the thing about commitment is I'm realizing commitment is what we create when we see the whole picture. And it's designed to get us through the short-term desires. So short-term, I don't want to go to acting class today, my acting session. I want to play this video game that I'm excited by right now. And I'm not really that keen on going to squash because, again, I want to play this video game and I've got all this work I want to do. And I've got a a movie date with someone tonight. And I'm like, there are some other things I'd like to do, but I'm committed to my acting craft and becoming a better actor because I see the long term. The long term, I'm going to enjoy being great at that. And then I might get to be the lead in a major film. So the brain can see the long term. Short term, don't want to do it. That's where commitment gets us through. I said I'm going to do it. I've set up a structure to do it. So I'm going to do it even when it doesn't feel like something that I want to do. Same if you commit to cold showers. You're probably not going to feel like having a cold shower. And I joined a gym and I've committed to playing squash at least twice a week, maybe three times a week. That commitment gets me out to do it. So what are you committed to in your life is one question. And is there a big commitment that you have not stepped into yet? It might be about growing your business. It might be about your relationship with your partner. Could be about developing yourself as a leader. I don't know what it is, but is there a commitment you haven't yet stepped into that could completely alter your life? Mm-hmm. And then you could either get help in creating those commitments or you could jump into it and then get help to stick to those commitments, because it's hard for most humans to create a big commitment that's new and that's creating change and live into that every day. Mm-hmm. It's possible. Most people actually need some external support, whether it's a mastermind or a really good action-oriented therapist or a coach or something like that. But yeah, that's what I've been geeking out about recently, this idea about different time frames. The brain is like, oh, here's my short-term thing. I'm just going to go with that versus this is my long-term thing, even when it doesn't feel good.
It relates to something you said earlier. Most of us drastically underestimate what we can achieve in a year, but we drastically overestimate what we can achieve in a day. Our to-do list for the day will have 475 items on it when you've really only got 4 hours, of free time. And it's like, wait, why? Of course you didn't achieve that. This is ridiculous. But then across a year, a lot of times I've seen people set, what really is a very small goal if they commit and do the work for that full year with where they could go. So I think that's related to that too.
I like that expression. There's another one that I've been saying that I think I want to put in that same format because I talk about risk a lot. And a lot of us take crazy risks that have no upside. And yet the really great risks that have huge upside, we overstate it. Let's see if I put it. So people drastically underestimate the risk of simple day-to-day things like wearing a seatbelt or smoking a cigarette or eating sugar. And yet they drastically overstate the risk of things like asking someone to work with them or asking someone out on a date or
getting in front of a group and speaking.
Yeah, that's good. You've given me another way to state that fundamental human.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. I think we're not really good at looking at relative risk in a lot of cases.
Yes.
So one of the questions that I like to ask all of my guests, of course, my brand is Inspired Stewardship, and I run things through that lens of stewardship. And yet I've also discovered that that's a word that has a lot of different meanings to a lot of different people. So let me ask you this. How would you define the word stewardship, and how has that definition played itself out in your life?
Stewardship to me sounds like guidance, like shepherding something or guiding something. And I think it's played out mainly in that that's the profession I've chosen. Mm-hmm. That I'm, and people often, like when we do a trial session to see if we're a fit, people are looking for what's going to happen in our coaching sessions. What are you going to do? What's your method? What's your structure? Mm-hmm. I've been at this for 25 years. I could pull something out in a coaching session that I've never said before because that's what's called for in the moment. But the big picture is I'm looking to guide someone's life in the direction that's really meaningful for them. So that's how stewardship shows up for me. And I've had other people do that for me. I've had coaches do that for me. And sometimes some good friends drop in just what I needed at the right time. Like I was looking at leaving Boulder last year and a friend of mine's, really? You just got there 2 years ago and you're going to move on to something else? Take a breath. I was like, oh, okay. That's really good. So I get guidance from many great teachers and coaches, and then I, whatever I've learned, I try and pass on to people. That's gratifying for me to pass it on as I, sometimes I might've gotten something yesterday and then boom, that shows up in a coaching session.
So the other question that I like to ask everybody is, let's say I could invent a magic machine and I could grab you out of the chair where you sit today and travel with you into the future, maybe 100 to 150 years. And magically you were able to look back on your entire life and all of the ripples and the impact that you've left behind. What impact do you hope you've left on the world?
I want the expression of naming a mouse or addressing the mouse in the room to be part of our lexicon, to be a mainstream thing. I want kids going up to parents saying, hey, mommy, can I name a mouse with you? I want people in board meetings like, there's a mouse in the room I want to address. I want the whole concept of revealing our inner experience to become a mainstream thing that we have language around versus this front that we present to the world. And I think this will change the world. My hope is that this book and this concept will change the world and have people be more real with each other and have more facility around being with the emotions that come up around that. Because that's one of the reasons we don't share stuff is because it could bring up emotions with other people. But what if we welcomed? What if we're like, okay, I'm creating some good trouble here. I'm going to share my feeling. Then you'll have a feeling about that. And then I might have a feeling about that. And we keep ping-ponging back and forth around what's real. That's the legacy that I'd like to leave for the world.
So what's coming next for you as you continue on this journey? What's on your roadmap? You've got the book coming, but what else?
Yeah, I think I'm going to create a 5-day challenge around doubling revenue for people who want to engage with some of the content that I have and challenge themselves and really show up. I'm really enjoying the coaching I'm doing. I'm not sure that the coaching is going to shift, but my side hobby of acting is getting a lot more of my attention. And so I'm working with a singing coach, I'm working with an acting coach. I just played Dracula in a local play. That was my first professional production. And I want to see how far this goes and really have fun. I'll be coaching people. I'll be running my business and coaching people and also auditioning for a whole bunch of stuff. And I'm fascinated by the whole way that acting ties into personal growth because true acting is about having real emotions under imaginary circumstances and really feeling everything. And that's what I want to encourage people to do with the book, that your feelings are welcome. Your feelings are okay. Let's be expressed. So those are some of the things that are coming. And I might actually move. I'm planning to move to Los Angeles as well so that I can be in the center of things as far as acting goes. I might have my own talk show at some point. I've always wanted to be a cross between Conan O'Brien and Dr. Phil. So that might be in my future.
Boy, that's an interesting image, but okay.
Yeah, I think that could be in my future as well.
Okay. You can find out more about David Wood on Instagram and Twitter as _FocusCEO. He's also on LinkedIn as Focus-CEO or on Facebook as Play for All. David has a YouTube channel as well, Focus with David Wood, and you can find out all about his services, the books, and more over on his website at focus.ceo. Of course, I'll have links to all of that in the show notes as well. David, is there anything else you'd like to share with the listener?
Yeah, just to clarify, it's Play for Real on Facebook. You can go / Play for Real with 3 L's. That's how you find me on Facebook. And yeah, I'd like to offer an invitation. If something resonated for you during this and you're thinking I could go further with coaching and maybe this guy would be the coach for me, go. I have a link where you can request a 15-minute double your revenue audit. And we'll just look at your business and see if coaching makes sense. And you can do that at myfocusgift.com. And I actually lined up a gift basket of goodies for you as well that could really help you in your business. But that double your revenue audit, I think, is the biggest thing that I could do for you. And that's at myfocusgift.com.
Thanks so much for listening to the Inspired Stewardship Podcast. As a subscriber and listener, we challenge you to not just sit back and passively listen, but act on what you've heard and find a way to live your calling. If you enjoyed this episode, please do us a favor. Go over to inspiredstewardship.com/iTunes rate, all one word, iTunes rate. It'll take you through how to leave a rating and review and how to make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so that you can get every episode as it comes out in your feed. Until next time, invest your time, your talent, and your treasures. Develop your influence and impact the world.